Now from the KSFR newsroom, At Noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Tuesday, November 19th.
Albuquerque voters are deciding today on an anti-abortion measure that would ban the procedure after 20 weeks of gestation. It makes no exception for cases of rape or incest, though it does permit termination if the pregnancy threatens the life of the mother. Already, some 44,000 voters have weighed in on the matter by voting early, almost double the number who did so for last month's Duke City mayoral election. It's the first time such a law has been decided by a city. Similar laws have been presented at the state level elsewhere and were deemed unconstitutional. Santa Fe's mayoral candidates seeking to qualify for public campaign financing turned in contributions raised from hundreds of donations to the city clerk by Monday's deadline. City Councilors Patty Boucher, Bill Demas, and Rebecca Wurzberger, former State Democratic Party Chairman Javier Gonzalez, and former Santa Fe County Manager Romana Beta are all seeking public money. Qualifying candidates will get $60,000 in city funds. Each had to submit 600 $5 contributions. Los Alamos National Laboratory researchers are investigating the complex relationships between the spread of the HIV virus in a population and the actual rapid evolution of the virus within each patient's body. LANL investigator Thomas Leitner says by using computer modeling, researchers have achieved novel ways of estimating dynamics of epidemics important for public health monitoring, decision-making, and intervention campaigns. The team also has developed a model that helps determine exactly when a person was infected with HIV. Video of a routine New Mexico State Police traffic stop in late October near Taos that turned chaotic and led to officers shooting out the tires of a minivan loaded with children has drawn national attention over the use of police gunfire in such incidents. Dashboard camera video shows driver Oriana Farrell disobeying police orders and driving off, prompting a high-speed chase and ending with police gunfire. The 39-year-old mother from Tennessee was pulled over again, and the video shows two of her five children getting out of the vehicle to confront an officer. State police are investigating the incident. Santa Fe Community College's governing board has decided to place President Ana Cha Guzman on administrative leave pending further action by the board. An announcement from SFCC stated that the board has appointed Vice President of Academic Affairs Randy Grissom as acting president. The board has its regularly scheduled meeting today at 5 p.m. at the Santa Fe Community College boardroom. A study sponsored by the nation's mayors forecasts Albuquerque's economy will grow faster than the nation's next year, ending 3 years of stagnation. The Albuquerque Journal reports the analysis from the U.S. Conference of Mayors states that while the Duke City's growth rate has been in neutral for two straight years, it's poised to grow at better than three times the current rate in 2014. Albuquerque's economy is larger than other cities of similar size in the western region, including Tucson, Colorado Springs, and El Paso. Worldwide, it's the 150th largest economy, ranking behind Syria and ahead of Serbia. As San Miguel County officials consider a regulatory oil and gas ordinance, anti-fracking advocates have announced groundwater testing at various county locations. The co-founder of Drill Mora County, Kathleen Dudley, says the testing will establish water quality prior to the approval of any ordinance that opens county lands to fracking.
We are using our baseline to make a statement that they are not welcome and that we are very assertive in knowing how to fight this fight.
Neighboring Mora County in April approved a ban on oil and gas drilling, prompting a lawsuit announced last week by the Independent Petroleum Association of New Mexico and others. State Education Secretary Hannah Scandera says the state is off to a good start with a new program that provides a $5,000 stipend for teachers transferring from a top-ranked school to a low-rated one. The Las Cruces Sun News reports that 15 teachers from Española, Estancia, Gallup, Taos, and Las Vegas City school districts have signed up for the effort. Qualifying teachers must have taught full-time at schools with A or B grades last year and must now teach full-time at schools with D or F grades and stay through the next school year. The City of Santa Fe is advising that sidewalk and water improvements began today at various locations. The 30 to 40 day sidewalk construction from 9 a.m. till 3 p.m. is taking place at Alameda Street at El Castillo, Camino de las Crucitas between Rio Vista and St. Francis, and Sunset Otero Street between Artist Road and Paseo de Peralta. And city crews will also conduct work requiring the water to be shut off at Camino Sierra Vista and Catherine Alarid and Rosita Streets until 6 p.m. today. Weather for Santa Fe, sunny today with highs in the low 50s. It'll be the last such day until early next week. A complicated weather pattern begins to move in tomorrow with a slight chance for showers, and forecasters are keeping a close eye on it.
Currently, we are monitoring a low-pressure system that is developing off the California coastline, as well as some very cold air for November that is pooling across the northern plain states. The two of those systems look like they may come together across New Mexico as we go into Thursday night through the weekend and provide us with a decent shot of some frozen precipitation, sleet, freezing rain.
Meteorologist Brian Geyer with the National Weather Service Office in Albuquerque. I'm Tom Trowbridge, KSFR News.
Thank you, Tom. And taking a look at Wall Street at midday, the Dow currently off 24 at 15,951. The NASDAQ down 22 points at 3,926, and the S&P 500 is off 6. It stands at 1,785. At noon on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
13 minutes past the hour as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. Wage theft, it's a major issue in our state. While immigrant workers in particular are frequent targets of the illegal practice, there are also instances of non-immigrants being treated the same way. On Thursday, November 21st, there'll be a free wage theft clinic in Santa Fe that aims to help those who think they have been a victim of the crime. Joining us now is Marcela Diaz, the executive director of Somos Un Pueblo Unido and its United Workers Center unit, which is sponsoring the event. Marcela, let's start by having you tell us about who is likely to be the victim of wage theft.
Well, we were a part of a study that Dr. Andrew Frank at the University of New Mexico conducted last year, which showed, unfortunately, that one in four Mexican immigrants is a victim of wage theft. But we also know that it doesn't just happen to Mexican immigrants. It happens to workers from all walks of life. And so it's something that we, that our members at the United Workers Center of New Mexico, which is a project of Somos Un Pueblo Unido here in Santa Fe, have been working very diligently on for quite a number of years now. We've been working at the state level to improve protections and remedies for victims of wage theft to make sure that there are strong disincentives for employers so that they don't steal their wages from their workers, but also so that there are swift ways for low-wage working families to recuperate money that they've already worked for and that their employers are not paying them. So those are some of the things that we've been working on. Now, this next Thursday, November 21st, we are holding our annual wage theft clinic where we have representatives from the Department of Labor, from the Department of Workforce Solutions, the state level, and this year from the City of Santa Fe as well, as folks from Somos Un Pueblo Unido and employment attorneys to help workers, regardless of their immigrants or not, both immigrant and non-immigrant workers, to actually learn about their rights. And if they do have claims, we will be on hand helping individuals actually file their wage claims.
And short of simply not paying someone what was initially agreed to, what are some of the other ways of committing wage theft?
The more common types that we are seeing from folks who come into the worker center are hotel workers, for instance, who are complaining about being required to work off the clock. So there are a lot of housekeepers, for instance, who are asked to or required to clock out and then finish their last room. And so in some cases, it's, you know, 10 minutes being shaved off or 15 minutes off daily. And that may not seem like a lot to your listeners, but over the course of a week, a month, or a year, it can really it can really impact the income of a family, and it can certainly help the employer make a lot of money off of their workers that they're not entitled to. So not only is it not the moral thing, it's actually against the law to ask your workers to work off the clock in that way. So that's one example. Misclassifying workers as salaried or as contractors when they are in fact employees that work for an hourly wage, not paying a last paycheck or last two paychecks is also very common. So those are some of the forms of wage theft that we're seeing at the United Workers Center of New Mexico.
Now, do the unscrupulous employers just assume that for one reason or another, the worker won't complain?
Well, first of all, I think it is important to note that it's the minority of employers who are engaging in this kind of wage theft. The majority of employers are not. And so these really are the bad apple employers that unfortunately are putting at a competitive disadvantage the employers who are following the rules. So that's important to state from the get-go. But the employers who are doing this, I think, often count on misinformation in the working community. A lot of folks who come to FOMOS don't know exactly how they are victims of wage theft. It's much clearer when a person doesn't get a last paycheck, but there are folks who come in and say, you know, I don't get paid overtime, but my employer says I don't have to get paid overtime because I signed a piece of paper saying that I would waive my right to overtime, which, of course, is against the law. We have labor standards for a reason, basic labor standards. So I think that there is misinformation in the community. Sometimes folks don't know that they're victims of wage theft, and certainly it's something that happens in the immigrant community. People are very vulnerable and afraid of sometimes retaliation, cutting of hours. In some cases, people are threatened with getting immigration officials called. But I have to say that most often, the fear is losing one's job in this kind of economy.
And you mentioned the upcoming clinic on Thursday, the 21st. What sort of services will you be offering there?
The United Workers Center of New Mexico, again, which is a project of Somos and Pueblo Unido, we're around 365 days out of the year, and we are open to both immigrant and non-immigrant workers. We give information to folks about their rights, their protections, and their remedies under the law in both the city of Santa Fe and the state of New Mexico. And so we invite folks to come in. What's different about the wage theft clinic is that we'll actually be there to help people through the process of filing their wage claims, help them figure out what the process is. And so that's the additional help that we'll be giving at the clinic. But throughout the rest of the year, of course, we're constantly doing workshops, presentations, organizing workers' committees throughout Santa Fe, and giving that much-needed information to our community.
And should someone learn at the wage theft clinic that they've been a victim and you help them file a complaint, will your group be available for support and further guidance throughout the process that follows?
So we will certainly be available to any of the folks who come on Thursday in subsequent days and weeks to help them follow up with their claim.
And tell us again where and when this free of charge event takes place.
The United Workers Center of New Mexico is located at Somos en Pueblo Unido's office, which is 1804 Espinacita Street in Santa Fe, across the street from the Sangre de Cristo Apartments and next to Firebird. So that's for folks who want to find our address physically. Our phone number is 424-7832. And the Wage Theft Clinic, which is both open to immigrant and non-immigrant workers, is going to take place from 5:30 to 7:30 after work on Thursday, November 21st.
Marcela Diaz of Somos un Pueblo Unido, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
The grassroots organization We Are People Here is showing the documentary Shift Change on Tuesday, November 19th at 7 p.m. at the Center for Progress and Justice, 1420 Cerrillos Road. This film is about worker co-ops in the United States. Shift Change gives a behind-the-scenes look at cooperative successes in the U.S. and Europe, pointing out that this movement is creating jobs, strengthening communities, and showing that another economy is possible. For more information, go to wearepeoplehere.org or call 988-9708.
And 20 minutes past the hour, as At Noon continues, the Mexican gray wolf. The Southwest, including New Mexico, is the animal's native habitat of history. But the modern era has decimated the population, and it's only been in recent years that human intervention has begun to reintroduce the species. The program has had its successes, but whether it continues in a fashion that truly protects against extinction remains to be seen. A host of governmental policies at state and federal levels have to come to common agreement how best to do this. Ahead of a public meeting tomorrow in Albuquerque, we're joined now by Craig Miller, the Southwestern representative for Defenders of Wildlife. Founded in 1947, the organization is a major national conservation advocate focused on habitat preservation and the safeguarding of biodiversity. Craig, regarding the Mexican gray wolf, we've heard of plans that call for the creation of a habitat strip across our state, roughly north of our Interstate 10, south of Interstate 40. And while any large swath so dedicated would be welcome, it's been criticized as an unnatural and arbitrary boxing in of range, which would also require that any wolves straying from the area would be captured and returned. As we move toward crafting a mutually agreed-upon policy, where does the entire matter stand at the moment?
Yeah, well, Mexican gray wolves remain as one of the rarest and most critically endangered land mammals in the world. We're 15 years into an effort to repatriate them to the wild. As you know, the program has experienced some problems and some successes. But what's clear is that changes are needed to allow this program to succeed, to allow Mexican wolves to roam freely in the wild in the future. So the proposed changes are absolutely crucial. One of those would allow more wolves to be released in more places, which would help strengthen the population's genetic health and lead toward recovery. But one of the problems is that the proposal includes boxed management. It sets up arbitrary boundaries that would prevent wolves from moving into suitable habitat areas, which scientists say are critical for their recovery. One of the problems is that any wolf that leaves this bigger boxed area would be trapped and moved back into the core area, which effectively prevents dispersal, which is necessary for recovery. It's necessary to get new genes into new populations.
And hasn't there been recent talk about taking the animals off the endangered list?
Yeah, and one thing it's important to understand is that Mexican gray wolves are a separate subspecies or a race of gray wolves. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced plans to remove federal endangered species protections for wolves across the lower 48. These plans will be disastrous for gray wolf recovery in the United States, particularly in areas where they don't currently exist, like Colorado and Utah and other areas which host fantastic habitat for wolves and would benefit from their presence. But concurrent with that federal delisting is a proposal to relist Mexican gray wolves as a separate subspecies. And part of that relisting proposal includes several changes to the current recovery effort in New Mexico.
And of the successes thus far with reintroduction, would this so-called boxed habitat we've spoken of cause setbacks?
Well, let me be clear. There are some positive changes that are being proposed. But along with those are other barriers that would be put up for recovery. There have been three groups of scientists convened by the federal government in the last 31 years to try to update the recovery plan for Mexican gray wolves. That is, the roadmap for recovery, or what's essential to keep the population around forever. Each one of those teams has identified the need for a minimum of three populations of Mexican wolves. The problem is that what's being proposed now will prevent dispersal and the creation of second and third populations. It'll expand the current population, which is absolutely essential, but it will prevent dispersal into new habitat areas, which are necessary for wolf recovery.
Craig, can you speak to why the focus on the Mexican gray wolf has broader ramifications for biodiversity overall?
Yeah, absolutely. First, let me start off by saying that Mexican gray wolves in the Southwest, in New Mexico and Arizona, enjoy broad, overwhelming support from the public. 73% of the public in New Mexico and 81% in Arizona strongly support the restoration of wolves throughout the region, and for good reasons that span from a sense of ethical responsibility to right a wrong of the past, the importance of wolves to balancing nature and the ecological role they play in keeping prey populations in line with habitat carrying capacity. They change prey behavior to reduce the effects of overgrazing, which can have watershed benefits from reducing erosion to promoting cottonwood willow regeneration along stream banks, which can provide benefits for trout and benefits throughout the system. But more importantly, it's our responsibility. We have assumed, whether we like it or not, we have assumed the responsibility of determining which species will and which ones will not survive into the future. And that responsibility warrants the thoughtful consideration of facts, not myths and fears, but science-based decisions. And all the science points to the important role that wolves play in balancing nature. And at this point in time, building forest resiliency through increasing the biological diversity and strength of the system is in everyone's best interest, from ranchers to farmers to wildlife enthusiasts. It's a win-win. Obviously, there are conflicts shrouding the wolf recovery effort, but there are also solutions. In fact, there are solutions that have been developed by ranchers and landowners who have been most affected by wolves over the years, which have very strong potential for success.
Craig Miller of Defenders for Wildlife, many thanks for joining us today. A Wednesday public meeting in Albuquerque at the Embassy Suites will be hosted by the Fish and Wildlife Service. They'll be taking feedback on changes to the Mexican Gray Wolf Recovery Program in general and the delisting from the endangered species category. At noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from MexicanWolves.org. Inviting the public to attend a sidewalk rally and public hearing on proposals that will help decide the fate of the endangered Mexican wolf in America's Southwest. This Wednesday, November 20th, at the Embassy Suites Hotel on Woodward Place Northeast in Albuquerque. For more information about Wednesday's rally, the public hearing, and related events taking place that day, visit MexicanWolves.org. That's MexicanWolves.org.
28 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Although vaccines have long been shown to help prevent certain communicable diseases, many parents choose not to have their children vaccinated. The state has just released a new study on non-vaccinators. Here's KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard with the story.
The State of New Mexico Department of Health has completed a survey regarding parents who choose not to have their children immunized based on religious beliefs. Mike Landon is an epidemiologist with the department.
Despite a state law that only allows vaccination exemptions for two classes, a medical exemption or a religious exemption, we found that the majority of respondents to our survey, and these were parents whose kids had a religious exemption, a majority of those parents stated that the reason they got the exemption was for philosophical or personal reasons. There's been an increase of about 200% in the number of vaccine exemptors from 1999 until recently. So we're concerned about that. There's an association between vaccine exemption and vaccine-preventable disease, such as pertussis and measles. And it would only take the wrong sort of introduction of, say, measles into one of these pockets of a vaccination exemption in the state for us to have some real challenges at slowing a significant outbreak.
There were certain characteristics shared by many of the exempting parents.
Parents of kids with vaccination exemptions for religious reasons tend to be from northern New Mexico. They tend to be white, and they tend to have completed a college education.
There is some confusing information from the report regarding why parents are making this choice.
It's hard to tell from the survey exactly what this group of parents is thinking. One, they clearly feel that vaccine-preventable diseases can be severe. On the other hand, they feel that their child shouldn't be vaccinated. So either there's a sense that others who are getting vaccinated will protect their child, or there's a disconnect somewhere.
A reason used by some parents is the now highly questioned reports of some vaccines causing autism.
We have some evidence in the survey that there is a belief that vaccines may be related to autism, despite the fact that this claim was based on very poor science that has been debunked. We actually felt in this state that we had done a pretty good job of educating people about the falsehood of the relationship of vaccination and autism. But it's clear that we need to do more education. There's some bad information on the internet. It's spread from basically person to person. And this information needs to be challenged. We need to educate people more properly. And we need to make sure people follow New Mexico state law, which only allows for a vaccination exemption for a medical or religious reason, not for a philosophical reason. And we need to do a better job of educating people about that.
There's a concern that the increasing numbers of children not being vaccinated may endanger all the children that they come in contact with.
If enough people in a population, kids in a school, are vaccinated, transmission of vaccine-preventable diseases is typically interrupted. So that's what we shoot for. But when we have clusters of a number of kids that are not vaccinated, either because of exemptions or because the school is not doing a good job of tracking these vaccination records, then the entire school population and the surrounding community is at risk for the spread of vaccine-preventable disease.
There are some diseases being reported in New Mexico which could perhaps have been prevented by vaccination.
We have a lot of pertussis in the state. We really have a hard time sorting out how much of this is due to kids not being vaccinated in school due to vaccination exemption versus waning immunity and other issues. We do know that there's good literature, scientific literature, supporting the connection between pertussis and vaccination exemption. We also know we've had measles cases that had the potential for spread in situations where there's vaccination exemption. Luckily, the most recent situation we had occurred during the summer when kids were not in school. If this had happened during the school year, we may have had a different situation.
Mike Landon with the New Mexico Department of Health.
Overall, I think it would come down to the fact that this group of parents believes that the benefits to their child of vaccination do not outweigh the risks of vaccination. So it appears to be sort of a cost-benefit analysis within that family.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
Are you being paid less than the city minimum wage? Does your boss not pay overtime or make you work off the clock? Let me guess, you haven't made a claim because you're afraid to get fired. Wage theft is a crime, and you have the right to recuperate your wages without retaliation. Come to the Anti-Wage Theft Clinic on Thursday, November 21st at 5:30 p.m. at Somos Un Pueblo Unido, located at 1804 Espinacita Street. Attorneys will be on hand to answer questions and help you file your claim. For more information, call the Worker Center at Somos at 983-6247.
12:34 here in the KSFR newsroom, just past the bottom of the hour, presents the perfect opportunity to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
Yes, Halloween 2013 is ancient history, a long-distant memory, already the stuff legends are made of. I can only hope my neighbors will quickly forget me streaking buck naked down the street for 3 blocks. I was confused, off my meds, flashing back to the bloodshed at Thermopylae, or Monopoly, or however you pronounce it. During Halloween night 2013, approximately 30 to 40 trick-or-treaters came to my doorstep for treats with nearly a trick that wasn't right. For the momentous evening, I'd purchased a bag of candy from the Hershey Company containing 100 pieces of individually wrapped candy. The most prevalent candy amongst the 100 pieces, Whopper. You know Whopper, those little ball-shaped pieces of chocolate and chemicals combined with air? Why so many Whoppers? Easy, they're cheap. So when you hear a politician promise a Whopper of a promise, remember, like the candy, they're cheap and filled with air, mostly hot. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Tom Trowbridge and Charles Maynard. We'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow. And as always, we hope you join us.